Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. Now it's time to review the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Welcome back to the show, Diane.
Thank you, Denny. Of course, it's always an honor and a privilege to be with you.
Hey, we're a good team.
Yeah.
Well, this month's movie is The Last Imperial Soldier, the true story of a Japanese soldier who refused to surrender at the end of World War II. He lived in the mountain area, wore his uniform, carried his weapons, had built a nice hut to live in and hunted for food. And this story takes place 30 years after the war ended. This is quite a story, especially for us military folks. Whoever decided to do this did their homework too, didn't they?
Yes, absolutely. It was fascinating. And again, the life is stranger than fiction. It was astounding to me that this soldier was so devoted that he would not surrender except to his commanding officer. But I believe, and I could be mistaken, but I believe he didn't realize the war had ended for so many years. And then when a hiker came upon him, he said, hey, the war is over, but he wouldn't surrender until he heard it from his commander.
Well, just why would you believe somebody who's out hiking?
Yeah.
On the other hand, if it's a war zone and he's dressed like a hiker and carrying nothing but a bottle of water and a hiking stick, maybe that's an indication that things aren't dangerous.
Well, yeah, but again, it spoke to the mentality of the time. I mean, again,
yes.
Those soldiers would get in a plane and expect not to come back, which is something that was, no pun intended, foreign to our mentality at that time, and still is.
Well, so. Imperial Japan was not a place where you expressed your emotions and feelings. You did what you were told, and you did it, and you did it well, and you kept doing it till you were told to stop doing it. That was
exactly.
Part of the entire culture, especially in the military, but not just in the military. But to do it for a month or a year or a couple of years, but 30 years, there's dedication.
Right. And again, it speaks to the cultural differences, too. So, fascinating film, I thought.
Yes, and what an insight into, one, an aspect of culture, but two, some of the really amazing things that go on in this world that we don't know about. Wow. I mean, wouldn't it be an interesting world if all of us had that dedication to our duty that that guy had?
Correct. And, of course, so many do, and that's why I'm so pleased to be here with you every month, Denny, thanking always our men and women in uniform for preserving our freedom and to let them know it does not go unappreciated.
Well, yes, we do appreciate our vets, of course. You know, in my opinion, he clearly had what we would call today post-traumatic stress disorder. He had flashbacks. He clings to his commander's final instructions.
Right.
There's nothing unusual about that. He'd been in combat, close combat. He saw all his friends either die or desert him. Or move on, whatever.
Yeah. He was basically in solitary confinement all those years. Yeah.
So, as we've discussed before, this suggests that most people with combat experience have severe reactions which are potentially dangerous, which is not true. It is in some cases, like this one, he was potentially dangerous, but in fact, he didn't hurt any people. So, I need to make my pitch here that people who have been in combat, even those suffering from PTSD, for the most part, 99% are not dangerous. And the few that are taken care of, at least in America. So, let's go on to the film. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom, and we're discussing the movie of the month, The Last Imperial Soldier with Diane Raver. Here are some listener comments. One, it's hard to believe someone could live like that for 30 years. Well, I think we agree with that one, Diane.
I would say.
His hut was nice. He had electricity, and he played a phonograph. Wonder where the electricity came from.
I can't answer that, but, you know, who knows?
Well, he may have, as part of combat, he may have had some kind of a generator that he, you know, running water could turn.
Maybe a cranky thing, too, you know.
Yep. No, good point. In those days, cranking phonographs were not that uncommon.
Right.
He apparently met Japanese civilians while out hunting, and for some reason they accepted him, and he ignored them for 30 years. Well, frankly, if I was out doing something, hunting, hiking, and some guy with a gun came by, and he wasn't going to approach me, I wasn't going to approach him. That sounds normal to me. Does it to you?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if he's not bothering you, he's not.
I think there's a multitude of errors along this story, but I mean, the thing is, it happened. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we may not be able to replay every bit of it with 100% accuracy.
Correct.
But the fact that it did go on for 30 years, and these kind of things did have to happen. Interesting that the girl that he met with bananas decided to come out and find him and then to come to him. And then it's terrible that in a fit, he shot and killed her. That's a horrible thing. It's wonderful that she was reaching out to him, and that kind of thing can happen. So I don't think that's improbable.
Right. And of course, you know, cautionary tale to those of us who think we are being kind, that you don't know what someone's been through and how to approach them. So there's a cautionary tale there for civilians and people that think they were doing something kind.
Yes.
Maybe to err on the side of caution.
Yes, that young lady clearly went far beyond reasonable caution.
Right.
But it's not like I've never done that.
Well, me neither, for that matter.
I'd love to tell you I'm perfect, but you know me too well to believe it. And his attempt at suicide was real. I would expect that he at least considered it a number of times over 30
years. I would think over 30 years, you know.
Because that means his family was gone, all his friends were gone from him. I don't know if they were gone. As far as he was concerned, they were gone. He had no communication with them, not his military assignment, nothing. He was alone, truly alone. So, yeah, that makes sense. Interesting that his commander, one could be found and brought to him. Guam is quite a far away from Japan. Obviously, the Japanese government cared about him, appreciated him, and went to the trouble of figuring out who he was, who his commander was. The man was still alive and able to travel and willing to travel. That in itself is enough for a book.
Yeah, that was the beautiful part of the story, if you ask me, is that meeting could take place and that there could be resolution.
Yeah. I mean, just finding him and transporting him there and deciding where to meet. I mean, that's a big island, all that kind of stuff. And that's the fact that they remembered each other. I mean, 30 years later, you know. But it was a great story, and I would imagine if I were that commander, I'd sure do some thinking about who was Private so-and-so or Sergeant so-and-so, and I'd do some research. But it was great. It showed that the country cared for him. It showed that his former commander cared for him. And it showed that his values were real because he did what he'd say.
Yep. Steadfast. Yep.
Yep. And interesting, too, believable, that when the time came for him to leave his hut, he took time closing out his hut. And before he left, he had to go back and just have some quiet time in his hut. Well, that would make sense if that had been your home for 30 years.
Exactly.
And you're not just leaving for a vacation. You're going. I could certainly see that. I mean, I've lived in the house I'm in now for about 32 years. If I had to leave, I wouldn't just slam the door and leave. I'd want to enjoy some memories and stuff. So that all makes sense to me.
Oh, marvelous. I hope that your listeners enjoyed that one.
Yes, and the movie of the month for February is an amazing movie. It's The Pledge of Allegiance. You're going to love it, folks.
Yes, that's with our beloved Ed Asner, who you know, has been a big supporter of the Garden State Film Festival and is one of our honorary board members and has been with us 6 or 7 times over the years. And this film was born at a festival when I introduced the filmmaker to Ed. And the filmmaker then asked him if he would be so kind as to be the spokesperson in the film. So I'm a little bit partial to this one, and it tells the story of the Pledge of Allegiance starting in New Jersey, which I can't help but give a plug to.
Hey, that's you.
Yeah.
And the Garden State Film Festival is coming up in the end of March, correct?
Yep, March 28th through the 31st in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And we'd love to see all of your listeners with us, as many as could make it. So,
folks, I encourage you to be there. I'm going to try to be there myself. Thank you, Diane, for being a part of the Frontlines of Freedom team. I'm proud to have you as a team member. And thank you for your nonstop efforts to promote great movies. That's a big part of America.
It's an honor and a privilege, Denny. Thank you.
Our movie of the month, which we just reviewed, is The Last Imperial Soldier, a true story. Please go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog to get the link. You can still watch it for free to the end of this month. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us at the Foxholes on the Frontlines of Freedom. Join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the Frontlines of Freedom. Dismissed.